Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And now we continue with our series, Reefer Managed. We are at the halfway point today, segment 8 out of 16, as New York and New Jersey governors are both aiming for recreational legalization in the next few months. And remember our three-hour national call-in on this next Saturday, April 20th, called Ask a Legal State. I'll be co-hosting with Anne-Marie Awad from the Legal State of Colorado, and we'll see what we can learn from the experience of the 10 states ahead of us on this. That'll be next Saturday, April 20th, from noon to 3 on WNYC and public radio stations around the country. And here right now is one of the big things that New York and New Jersey can learn from legal states. The legalization measures in both legislatures here have faltered so far, partly because there is disagreement over equity. Now, Massachusetts, which has started opening legal cannabis stores, is the state that perhaps has learned the most about how to get a diverse group of people involved in the emerging legal industry, how legal cannabis can be a path to social justice for people and communities hardest hit in the past from criminalization. Now, in New York and New Jersey, as some of you may know, some black lawmakers in particular have come out saying they would rather see legalization delayed if details don't include how their communities will benefit from legal cannabis after decades of racially biased enforcement. So joining me now are two women who are at the forefront of this issue in their respective states. And they are Shalene Tidal, Commissioner of the Massachusetts Cannabis Control Commission, and Crystal Peoples Stokes, Democratic Majority Leader of the New York State Assembly, representing Assembly District 141, which includes Buffalo. Welcome to WNYC, Commissioner Tidal and Majority Leader Peoples Stokes. Hi.
Good morning. Hi. How are you? Thanks for the invite.
Thanks for having me.
And Majority Leader, I'll start with you. You came out against Governor Cuomo's proposal in the executive budget to legalize marijuana in early March, I see, according to what I've read. How much was it on this basis?
Actually, I did not come out against Governor Cuomo's legislation. I did, however, work with our staff and his staff and the Senate staff to negotiate a bill that would look more like the one I had introduced along with Senator Krueger that would spell out the fact that there would be resources, in fact 50%, that would go into communities that had been negatively impacted by mass incarceration. There were a lot of things in Governor Cuomo's bill that we did agree on and that we did negotiate and even to some extent change our ways, and he changed his ways on some issues. The only sticking point was the how do you get to this investment piece, and that did not happen. And so for that reason, for me, it was a non-go.
How would you?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Oh, you said the only sticking point was how we get to this distribution of resources. How would you?
I would like to see 50% of the revenue be invested in communities that have been negatively impacted. And that could look like a number of things. It could be investing in community schools that provide wraparound services for children, families, and community. It could be sidewalk repairs. There are a lot of these communities where kids can't even ride bikes on the sidewalk. It could be reentry efforts. It could be mental health services. It could be job training. It could be whatever will enhance the lives of the people who live right now in communities that are essentially almost hopeless.
I see.
It could be, making dollars available for investment in those communities. Right now, there's nothing but predatory lending type businesses in these communities. It could be a real look at how do you move those out and get in legitimate businesses that would help foster the community as opposed to just take away from it. The businesses that are there now add no value they take it, nothing comes back.
So I hear you. This is about a lot more than who gets the cannabis franchises. This is about all kinds of social investment into communities that have been hit hardest by criminalization in the past.
Right. Because if you think about it, Brian, you know, some of these people who went to jail, their children ended up in foster care. What are the things that happen to them in foster care that will prohibit them from having a good quality of life? They could need mental health services. There could be all sorts of needs for these communities. And to think that, you know, you can just say it as a, as, you know, like a concept mm-hmm. when it's so much bigger than that. I think you have to get a little bit more specific. And if you say that the dollars are going to go there, then I'm good with working through the construct of how that looks. But you have to say that it's going to happen. And if you don't have that in the legislation, I'm not convinced that it will. Now, I absolutely do trust Governor Cuomo, have a great working relationship with him. But he's not going to always be the governor. And it's going to take more than 1 or 2 or 3 years to repair these problems that have been created for generations.
So it's got to be in writing what some of these specific funding streams are going to be. I hear you. Commissioner Tittle, let me turn to you. And for New Yorkers and New Jerseyans who don't know this yet, Massachusetts recently became a legal state. It's the closest one to us geographically. How did Massachusetts deal with the socially conscious distribution of licenses to make money off of pot?
Well, we're lucky in Massachusetts because we had very strong public buy-in from the beginning through our ballot question and then through the legislature to ensure that disproportionately harmed communities are included in the industry. And it's basically up to our commission as a regulating agency to figure out what that looks like. So we are trying to be very honest and transparent about that process because we know that states like New York and New Jersey are looking to us. I would say that the approach we've taken in general is to focus on ownership and employment for people from disproportionately harmed communities to provide outreach and technical assistance to help get them in the industry. We also have a provision for investment from tax revenues into disproportionately harmed communities. Mm-hmm.
So the kind of thing that Majority Leader People Stokes was just advocating for New York, you're saying you have that in Massachusetts with some of the revenue, some of the tax revenue dedicated to going to communities that were harmed in the past disproportionately by criminalization?
We do, but as with many things, we have learned lessons about how to do it better. And our Massachusetts law actually leaves that subject to appropriation by the legislature every year. And so my recommendation would be to dedicate a specific proportion, like the majority leader said, 50% or another amount, and to give it teeth and to make it automatic so it doesn't have to be appropriated every year.
And listeners, we can take your phone calls on social justice via legalization of cannabis and how it's legalized and where resources go that will materialize through legalization. We can take your phone calls with what you advocate or what you would like to ask either of our guests at 212-433-WNYC as our series Reefer Managed continues. 212-433-9692 for Crystal People Stokes, the Majority Leader of the New York State Assembly, and Shalene Tittle, Commissioner of the Massachusetts Cannabis Control Commission, which is now part of that state government since the legalization there in 2016. And let me cut right to the chase on what I think you're very frustrated with, and correct me if I'm wrong, in Massachusetts. One of the major goals of the commission from the outset, as I've read about it and heard about it, was to ensure that the cannabis industry is not controlled by a handful of wealthy white folks in Massachusetts. And yet, currently, out of the 110 licenses for marijuana-related businesses that the state has given out, only 9 of those businesses are owned by women, and only 2 of them are owned by people of color. Is that accurate?
That's right. It's 138 now, and 3 that self-report as minority-owned. But, yes, that's about right.
Oh, my goodness. How did it come out that bad?
Well, it's early yet. We only have 15 stores open. But, essentially, what we need to do is make these goals consistent across the law, the regulations, the local approval process, and then have businesses themselves contributing. And so we are being very honest about the barriers that our businesses are facing. Real estate is a big one. Capital is a big one. And we are trying to address those barriers individually through our programs and to make sure that other states have access to the ways we're doing that.
And Majority Leader Peoples-Stokes, is that an issue in the New York legislature's debate? Kind of extra points for people who apply for these licenses or resources for people who apply for these licenses so it comes out more demographically representative or even, in fact, more weighted toward people from the same communities you were talking about before, those who have been disproportionately affected by criminalization?
Yes, I think there has been a commitment from both the governor's office as well as the legislation that I carry to ensure that that happens. One of the main pieces of that is helpful to it is with our medical marijuana, you couldn't be a felon and have get access to a license. That does not happen under adult use, nor should it, because just because you're a felon doesn't mean that you aren't capable of running a business. Doesn't mean you're a mass murderer. You could be a felon because you had a small amount of marijuana or, you know, any other crime. And so we have eliminated that as a barrier. The other thing I will point out is that the governor did listening tours all over the state of New York. And I don't care which community that listening tour went into, everyone said the same thing. They do not want big business coming in, taking over the industry. They would like it to be more New York state controlled with smaller type businesses being engaged. And so I think, you know, the governor and his folks are mindful of that. I certainly am as well. As you know, New York is very much an agricultural state. So we don't need people coming in and setting up grow facilities when we have tons of farms who mm-hmm. have the capacity to either grow and or establish their own grow facilities. And so I think that there is a concerted effort to make sure that, you know, opportunities are provided to New Yorkers from a small business perspective, from a micro perspective. And I think that there's a commitment on both sides of the issues on that one.
You know what? I think we have one of those farmers calling in. So let's talk to Sheldon from Aruka Farms, New York. Sheldon, you're on WNYC. Where's Aruka Farms?
It's located in Canajoharie, New York, for 90 West. It's about 40 miles west of Albany.
Thank you for calling in. What would you like to add?
Yes, I want to discuss the current legislation with, you know, recreational use in New York State. And my main concern is, like, a lot of times I'm just hearing this narrative about people of color not being able to raise funds and have money to compete in this industry. And I think that's just entirely false. There's plenty of successful people of color that could get involved in this industry and, you know, rival others in the industry. And, you know, it should kind of be up to us to reach down and help our own communities.
So you don't want the government...
I'm not sure where that narrative is actually coming from. That's not the narrative that I espouse. What I espouse is that you cannot give all the licenses to someone who is outside of the community. You have to provide an opportunity for some of the people who are in the community to have access to those licenses. I agree. People of color, a lot of people have money. In fact, we would be successful if we were able to bring the $2 billion underground market above ground day one. That's the goal that we're trying to reach. And that doesn't mean people don't have access to resources, but it does mean that they could need to have some training, some business training. They need to maybe know how to write a business plan. They maybe even know how to get support in figuring out how to apply for the state's licenses. There are a number of ways that you can set up operations to assist people in moving themselves into a legal business. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. We're not suggesting that the government should set up opportunities to hand out money to people to start a business. Mm-hmm. That's the wrong narrative, and quite frankly, I take offense at whoever said it.
And so, Commissioner Tittle from Massachusetts, what would you add to this piece of the conversation, given that in Massachusetts so far, the stat you cited was that of 138 licenses for marijuana-related businesses so far, only three have gone to people of color?
Well, it's 2019. We need to have minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses, and farmer-owned businesses. That's just part of the strength and the vibrancy of the industry. But I would say also I completely agree with the majority leader in that one of the goals here is to take that vibrancy and innovation and resourcefulness that we see in disproportionately harmed communities and add training as necessary so that they can be successful. In other words, to make it fair, if my parent was incarcerated for a drug offense and your parent has a trust fund, let's balance it out so that if we have equal skills and ambition, that it's fair to both of us.
Diane in Oceanport, you're on WNYC. Hi, Diane. Diane, do we have you? Diane, do I have your location right? Are you in Oceanport, New Jersey? I guess we don't have Diane. Let's try. Yep, oh, try one more time. Hi, Diane. Now maybe we have you. Are you there?
Hi, hello?
Hi. Get off your speakerphone, if you would, okay, so we can hear you well. Pick up your handset, and then everybody will be able to hear you.
Are you there?
We're here. Go ahead, Diane. Give it a shot. All right. I apologize. I don't know what the problem is. We'll try to get back to her.
I'm actually going to apologize as well. We are in the middle of session, and there are a couple votes on the floor that I personally need to go take.
Okay.
And so I'm going to weigh off, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Nice to hear your voice again, Ms. Tile. It's been a while since we first met at the first hearing New York held some years ago.
And
so you all have a great day, and thank you for your conversation on this very important topic.
Majority Leader, thank you very much for being part of it. And let's go to our next caller as we continue with the Massachusetts Marijuana Control Commissioner, Shalene Tidal, and see what we can learn. I should say Cannabis Control Commission. And Kelly in Putnam Valley, New York. You're on WNYC. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on. I'm so sorry that Senator Peoples-Stokes had to get off before my call. I work for SAM New York. I'm a field organizer here in New York, and we're very concerned about what Hoylman referred to as negligible consequences of commercial legalization. I think that needs to be taken much more seriously when you look at the data from other states about the negative consequences of commercial legalization. It's not negligible.
Right, and let me just jump in so listeners know that acronym that you use, which is SAM, that smart approach to marijuana, right?
And you're going to meet Kevin tomorrow, I understand, which is fantastic.
Okay.
And there's people up in Buffalo who are trying to get with Senator Peoples-Stokes and try to educate her on this matter. And we fully understand the need for decriminalization, and that's what we support. Commercial legalization is not going to give her what she wants. I think it's naive, and I think our guests from Massachusetts can support that in a way, that there's big money behind this, and to compete in that kind of industry requires loans and startup funds that minority communities don't necessarily have.
Uh-huh.
But here's the other piece of this that we want to, kind of hammer home, is that these communities also, have the most to lose when it comes to adding another addictive substance into the world. And, Will Jones is a wonderful person to talk to about
that. And I don't want to turn this segment into a debate over legalization versus decriminalization, which is in fact exactly what we're going to have with your colleague on Friday. But Kelly, I appreciate your call. And why, if you're worried about the money behind the lobbyists for the big marijuana industry companies, why would you not be as worried about the black market with the violence and things that attend the black market from decriminalization?
Yeah. Right. Well, see, here's the thing is, it doesn't change. The black market continues to thrive in states that have legalized. Okay, and there's reasons for that. So when you look at the data on what's happening in Oregon and Colorado and these other states, on California and the black market, it's not good. Commercial legalization is not fixing that problem. As a matter of fact, it's making it worse.
And I'm going to leave it there, and we will pick that up and explore that further on Friday when we're going to have a debate in the green space, in fact, between a legalization advocate and a decriminalization advocate on exactly the lines that Kelly in Putnam Valley was just calling about. So, Kelly, thank you very much. Commissioner, let me ask you for some background politically on the process of getting to legalization in Massachusetts. What New York and New Jersey might do, which I don't know if it's been done anywhere before, is actually have the legislatures pass a law. Massachusetts, like the state out west, had a referendum, right?
Right. We had a referendum in 2016, but then the legislature actually rewrote it the following summer, creating the commission and strengthening many of the equity provisions. I'd actually like to address one of the points from the previous call.
Sure.
Quickly. So the idea of adding another addictive substance is very disingenuous. In Massachusetts, baseline data shows that 1 in 5 adults use cannabis before legalization. I'm sure the statistics are similar in New York. We're not adding a substance. The idea of regulating is to allow consumers to have a tested product from a regulated store. But I do find it interesting, no matter how you feel about legalization, people tend to agree that we don't want to see an industry that's dominated by a few big exploitative players. So I think that's something that we all have in common.
All right. We had the just to finish that point or further that point a little bit, we had a guest last week who said he favors decriminalization as opposed to legalization because what he doesn't want is another legal industry like the alcohol industry pushing an addictive substance on people, getting out there with advertising and saying, use this, use this, use more of this, use R1 of this, because that's going to create more harm than the current black market, but let it be decriminalized.
So absolutely nobody wants to see another big alcohol. Nobody wants to see another big tobacco. That's why we have very strict advertising regulations, inventory tracking, testing regulations. The idea that the way to address that is through decriminalization and no regulation whatsoever is completely contradictory to the goal.
Last question. And it's another social justice question. How far has Massachusetts come on expungement or the sealing of records of people who've had marijuana convictions in the past?
So we do have expungement for cannabis convictions. It's not automatic, but it's allowed through a petition. I recently wrote a recommendation of 10 equity must-haves in any bill, and I included automatic expungement. I think it needs to be done in the same law at the same time as legalization so that people with past convictions can move forward in their life without having it held against them.
My guest has been Shalene Tidal, Commissioner of the Massachusetts Cannabis Control Commission, and we heard earlier from Crystal Peoples-Stokes, Democratic Majority Leader of the New York State Assembly. Thanks so much, Commissioner, for joining us. We learned a lot from you today, and we'll see how much the experience of Massachusetts so far can inform the debates still to come in New York and New Jersey. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Emily Bazelon next.